The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to BS Report. Another sunny day here in Southern California. July 4th weekend coming up. World Cup, NBA, all kinds of stuff happening. So let's talk some American football. Screw all these other sports. On the line right now, the Subway Fresh Take Hotline from NBC Sports, from Showtime's Inside the NFL, from about 19 other gigs. Chris Collinsworth, what's happening?
What's going on, brother? Did I hear you say that Brazil has been waxed?
Brazil has been waxed.
How about that? They were getting a little salty there at the end of that thing, weren't they?
It was like watching the late 70s Raiders or something. They were just get chippy.
A little chippy, it was.
Where do you stand on this whole World Cup thing? Because it's a little threatening to American football, right? And you're an American football guy.
I want to call the next World Cup.
Really?
I love it. I've got two daughters that both play soccer, and so I've been one of those lunatic dads in the crowd, you know, that yells, you know, kick it, you know,
right.
Great advice like that. And also, you know, I do have to admit, I'm also one that is, you know, offered the $5 if they ever score a goal, you know, and then you become a coach and then you realize that it's, you know, the person who scores the goal is often the least significant person. It's the cross and the positioning and the setup and the, you know, the whole thing. So you get a little more advanced. And then my daughter started getting recruited to some different colleges around the country. And so I went around and I kept asking these coaches, tell me what a good play is. Show it to me. I want to see it on film. I want to understand this game. And after a while, I kind of got to where I understood a little bit of it. She went to a camp at North Carolina. She went to some different places. And now when I watch it, it's a beautiful game. You know, I'm into it. I love it.
I do think that you're either in or you don't know what's going on with it. And there's a line that you can cross when you pick up the nuances and you realize, like, it's not about who scored the goal. It's about all the different things, and it's about somebody just blocking somebody off in the corner. And there's a million things that happen in the game that unless you watch it and you know what to look for, you just wouldn't see them.
But don't you think that's sort of the same way the European would watch American football? Like, you know, what's the point? Why are they huddling? You know,
right.
You know, you get all the same sort of questions that I think that we do or we ask about soccer. But, you know, I mean, let's face it. I once asked a coach one time, I said, you know, why, and this was the head coach at Xavier back in the day, I said, why is it that the Americans can never be as good as the rest of the world? And he said, well, you know, I don't know, but I have a theory on the whole thing. And I think that, you know, as you look at the rest of the world and the way they play and compare it to us, you know, our kids start off, they're 3 years old, and a bunch of parents that have never played the game are teaching them how to dribble between the cones and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, and the rest of the world, they've got sort of a ball and a wall. And these kids go out and kick that ball against the wall with a childlike imagination, a billion different ways, and that's their only toy, and there are no video games, and there's no nothing. And at the end of the day, you see them in the World Cup when they all grow up, and the Americans look like they're dribbling between cones, and the Brazilians and the rest of the world are looking like they're playing with a childlike imagination. And when you watch it, I was like, you know, every time I watch a soccer game, I think of that comment. And, you know, and I think now the Americans are catching up, and that's not so true, but it probably was in the past.
Yeah, you even saw that today with the Netherlands. The way some of the things that they do are just on a level that we're starting to see it a little bit with some of the American guys, but obviously not on that same level. And they also have guys that were just born to kick the ball in the net. And, you know, it's like one of those things. You see it with running backs or quarterbacks or certain people are just destined to play that sport. And we, you know, we didn't really have that striker that I felt like you just looked at the guy and like, oh, that guy's a sniper. That guy's going to find the net, you know? And until we get a couple of those blue chip guys, I don't know. And you know, and then you look at like the guys that go into football And you think, like, man, imagine if Maurice Jones-Drew had been playing soccer since he was three.
Or one of our power forwards at 6'8". What if LeBron James is taking headers in the box?
Right.
Forget it. It's over. So, you know, our top athletes are getting pulled in a lot of directions.
Well, you're 6'6", right? 6'5", 6'6"?
6'5", yeah.
I mean, you would have been an interesting soccer player back in the day.
Trust me, every time I watch it, I think, you know, if I'm born in any country other than the United States, my ultimate dream is to play in the World Cup. You know, I mean, would have been, you know, the 6'5 guys with the headers and the little bit of speed and, you know, a little bit of footwork. And, yeah, it would have been classic. And now the only way I could run a 4'5 right now is to jump off a four-story building. You know, that's it. I get to the ground and that would be it. But
all right, we're going on a somber note here because, you know, you see what happened with Chris Henry and they found out he had the concussion damage, all that stuff. And this has become, I think, the biggest issue with football right now. Everybody's talking about the lockout, all this other stuff. To me, it's what we're learning about concussions. And I look at, I have a 2.5-year-old son who's built like a tank. And I think, like, do I want to allow this kid to play football with all the stuff that we're learning? Now, if you had to do it over again, would you have rather played football or soccer now that you know what kind of potential damage was out there?
Living in this country, I would have rather played football. You know,
yeah.
There is no doubt in my mind that the level of interest and the status that you have as an NFL player or a former NFL player or whatever is unique to anything else. I tell people all the time that, you know, I've been at tables with, you know, senators and congressmen and actors and you know, statesmen and heads of business and multimillionaires and all these different people, and I'm dying to sit there and have a conversation with them about what they do and what's going on in their world, and it's 1,000 times more interesting to me than what I'm doing in my world, and yet all anybody ever wants to talk about is the NFL. And I'm talking about in a group setting with men, women, and you know, they have questions, they want to know about their team, they want to know who's going to win this and who's going to win that, and they're so engaged, but they're specifically engaged with one team, you know, with one, and so typically I learn a lot from the conversations as well, and it's one of the things that I've figured out from broadcasting is that you know, the more I go on the road and the more I just sit and talk with fans, you know, it's amazing what you pick up about a local team, because those fans have been watching that team probably for the last 20 years, and they really understand the nuances of what's going on with the Pittsburgh Steelers or the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, and then you look at, like, some of these blogs that they have now where these people are just fanatically following every single thing that goes on with the team. And in a lot of cases, they really do know more than most of the national guys who are talking about, like, say, the Cleveland Browns. The Cleveland Browns blogger probably knows more about the team than they do.
There's no doubt about it. And it's really one of the things, and I was telling you before, that I've started this website that really we're kind of introducing on your show today.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, it's footballproslive.com. So footballproslive.com. And I, the more I started thinking about this whole thing that we're talking about, I said, I need to figure out a way to tap into this knowledge. And you know, a buddy of mine who made the site, Andy Freeland, was saying, well, you know, we should present this as we're doing this for the fans. And I said, well, I would, but that's total BS. I'm doing it, I'm doing it for myself. You know, I think the fans will enjoy being in a conversation. I've got some former teammates of mine, and I'm recruiting a couple other guys that'll be there. And we've put up some articles and some different things to sort of as conversation starters. But where I really want this thing to go is ultimately where the fans and the people that watch their individual team get into debates with me and the guys that used to play in the NFL, coaches, players, physicians. I've got an NFL doc that's a part of this thing, so we can talk about injuries as well. But I want to get into the nuances and the details and the minutiae of, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs and the Buffalo Bills and some of these teams that I'm not calling their games and don't know all the details, because that's what's really fun for me about it. It's like sitting in a bar somewhere and we're all jacking around and having a few laughs and having a good time, but you're also going to learn a lot about what's going on. So I'm excited about it.
When you say you have former pros, is that going to be the emphasis of it? All people who have played, coached, worked in the NFL, whatever, are you going to have writers too?
Well, you are more than welcome, my brother, because I've heard you talk about the league, and you're pretty darn good at it. I just have to get you your secret password to get in. But it's a, the funny thing is, I think that we've had, and we've sort of done some little test runs with it and all this kind of stuff, so we've been going back and forth. But it's amazing how much it's starting to turn into a locker room again. You know, I've got to be a little bit careful because I know that on the internet, people watch everything you say, and you know you don't want to say, have one of those moments out there.
Yep.
But yeah, I find myself with some of my buddies and my former teammates, you know, starting to get back into that whole jabbing and like, okay, Chris, stop and think now. Don't screw up your whole career here over having a little fun on the internet.
Right. So this is good because I only have you for that Sunday night game. And then I have you for Inside the NFL. And other than that, I don't really have you unless I happen to hear you on a radio show. So in my opinion, more of your insight and stuff would be great because I'm a fan of yours. How much material are you going to put on there?
Well, you can go on it. Go on footballproslive.com. You'll see I've probably written, I don't know, 10, 15 articles. And the only reason I haven't written more is like I've already bumped the first articles I've written off the front page because we haven't had it up for, you know what I mean? It's like, well, you know, this is ridiculous. I'm writing to nobody here, but I've been kind of fired up. And the thing I found, too, is that, and you know this, is, you know, if you're going to do an interview with, you know, a hockey player, well, you've got to go do a little research on the guy, and you've got to go do a little, a little background check so that you can have a decent conversation. And the more of these articles that I start to write and the more I respond, I'm always surprised at what I end up learning and researching that I didn't know to begin with. So, and probably my focus during the season is going to be a little bit more geared towards the two teams that I'm watching the tape of that week and, you know, who we're calling for that particular game. But, you know, I'm definitely going to be involved in all the different threads that come up. And, I don't know where this is going to go. That's kind of the exciting part about it is you just don't know which road you're going to take. And I know I'm going to take some of those shots to the head and, you know, I'm a jerk and I'm biased and, you know, I hate every team in the NFL. And
except the Bengals. You'll get that. You only care about the Bengals. You hate everyone else.
Oh, my God.
You get a few of those.
I don't think I've ever been in a city yet that somebody hasn't asked me the question, why do you hate the –
yep.
Whichever team that city I'm in, you know, why do you hate the Packers? I used to explain it, you know, I used to come out and go, you know, I really don't. It's just, you know, my job is to critique and I'm not a PR guy and I've got to try and tell the truth and, you know, all this kind of stuff. But I've been asked it so many times now, I've given up. And now people come up to me and say, you know, why do you hate the Raiders or whatever? I go, I don't know. I just hate them.
You know, you go the other way.
You know, I've given up. I don't have a choice.
That's funny.
I hate them. Yeah.
You know, Twitter would help you too. I don't know. You're not on Twitter, I don't think.
You know, I did that for a little while, but I'm sure I had no idea what I was doing with it. But it was a little too. It was a little too back and forth. And for me, I can't always be on it.
Yeah,
but I'm on it, you know, probably like you, 5 or 6 hours a day, and so when I'm on it, I want to be able to respond and go back and forth and go at it. But you know, I thought the 140, you know, things were a little limiting, and you know, with the email and this stuff, I can write, you know, big huge articles and react. And but it's hilarious. I mean, I'm already getting guys like just taking pot shots at me, and you're an idiot, and you don't know. And I'm like, it's like I'm back on talk radio. It's hilarious. I love doing it.
For some reason, this made me think of a weird question, which I've always wanted to ask you. Why don't they let you pick the game that you're going to announce that weekend on Inside the NFL?
You know, it's not that they won't let us do it. And it started when we were at HBO. And when I was calling the games, of course, a big part of what we do calling the games is going in and interviewing the respective teams before the game, because that's the access that we get that gives us an advantage in the broadcast. And really, if you didn't have that, our opinions may not be much better than the average Joe out there. So it is a huge advantage that the networks get. And yet what we found was that how many people watch that Inside the NFL show that are on, that are playing the games. And when I was, you know, you got to pick somebody. So that meant that somebody else was really mad. And guys were denying me interviews because I picked against their team that week.
Ah.
And I was like, this is stupid. You know, I can't do that. So I go, listen, you know, I'll pick the game, but I'm not going to put it out there before the game because it's killing me. I just quit doing it.
That's a totally logical explanation. I always thought that the network was worried that if you picked, say, the Cowboys over the Niners, then as the game was going on, you would be rooting for the Cowboys because you picked them, which seems stupid to me.
Yeah, well, you know, clearly I do that anyway. But no, it's, you know, it's such an interesting business. I mean, it really is, because it means so much to people, and I have to constantly remind myself of that. That, you know, this is really important to people in their respective towns, what's going on. And to some extent for me, it's been great going back and calling the games again as opposed to being in the studio, because you get a chance to really get back in and delve deeply into these teams. I mean, I know more about, you know, the backup right guard now than I used to know about a lot of the starters on some of these teams. When you're trying to study 32 teams and 50 guys on each team, and, you know, basically I was just doing comments every single week on Terrell Owens and Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. You know, what the heck? I didn't need to know the offensive lineman's name. So I like the minutiae. I like the detail of the game. It's been fun.
The other thing that you brought up before, how you get information during those interviews, I always thought this could lead to one of the great gambling scandals of the 21st century. Because you're learning stuff like, oh yeah, in the first quarter, you know, we feel like we can beat them deep on the second, you know, watch, we're going to test that right cornerback deep. You learn things that, if it ever landed in the wrong hands, could be really an advantage. Obviously, you wouldn't do it, but I'm saying, I mean, it's almost like a sports movie.
Yeah.
Evil announcer who gets all the info is like, oh, we're calling this in a first quarter bet. I know what they're going to do.
You know what? It's so funny. I mean, you're kind of right on top of this one, because I had a thing when I watched the television tapes of the games back, you know, getting ready for the next week or whatever. I typically don't watch past the first quarter because, I've got the game tape and I've already seen that. But most announcers, they can't hold their water. You know what I mean? It's like,
yes,
if they've got something good, and plus they don't want the play-by-play guy to do it, or they don't want the color analyst to do it ahead of them. So it's like, usually, well, here we are for the opening kickoff. He returns it to the 20. And oh, by the way, did I tell you that, you know, one of those kind of things? There's like a race to get the best information out there. And usually by the end of the first quarter, you're going to hear most of the A material.
Well, you know, John Madden was like that during his last few years. And I would always get mad because these guys would be like, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. And then in the first quarter on Pittsburgh's first drive, they would be pounding the right side and they'd be like, yeah, they told us they feel like they can run on the right side of their defense all day. Like, oh, thanks for telling me before the game. You know, this is great now in the first quarter after. But I always thought, and the other thing that's interesting, because I've talked to a few of the people who do this, like, some of the coaches are really forthcoming, and then other coaches are just kind of jerks, right, during those interviews?
Totally. I mean, there are some that will let you know what's going on, and there are others. Some of them get mad at you. You know, some of them are unhappy with something you've said about them in the past. Some of them just think that they, you know, it's like the biggest crown jewel in the world, that their information is going to somehow decide the football game. And you know, I tell you, a guy that I would have never believed it, but Dick LeBeau is, you know, I played, not for Dick because he was the defensive coordinator, but he was the defensive coordinator in Cincinnati for almost, I think, the entire time that I was here. And I was so excited when I got to call one of his games. I was like, oh, this is going to be great. Dick's going to tell me everything that's going on. Nothing. Nothing.
Dick, shut you out.
Nothing. I mean, like, he's the nicest guy in the world. He'll talk about, you know, anything on the golf course, but nothing. And Bill Parcells was probably the funniest about it, because he would get in there and, I mean, you would, by at the end of the half an hour, you'd be laughing and you had all this great information about the Mets and about the Knicks and about, you know, what was going on around in the World Cup, and he wanted to talk about all that, and then all of a sudden he'd look at his watch and go, oh, guys, I'm sorry, I got a meeting, I got to go, and you look down at your notes and you hadn't written down a word yet, you know? I mean, there's an art to this, there really is, and but I'll tell you, the one thing that I've learned is that if you come in ready, if you come in and you have studied the tape, and by your questions, they know that you know. You know, if they know that you know, they'll answer the questions. Because
right.
if all of a sudden, if I'm telling them, you know, what's the matter with your right guard? Is he hurt? He looks awful out there. And you know, kind of they'll roll their eyes a little bit and they go, well, you know, he has had a little bit of an issue, and or, you know, he's just not that good a player. You get the truth if you know enough to lead them down the path. But if you come in there and go, Coach, tell me what your game plan is, you know, they're going to start laughing at you.
July 4th weekend, always the weekend when I start getting in NFL mode, because you start going to the newsstands. Well, we have the big newsstands here in L.A., but you see the fantasy football magazines spread across the shelves. Like, oh, stay, I got to start thinking about fantasy. The Hall of Fame game is kind of in range. Exhibition season's a stone throw away. Guys are coming into camp. So I think we're like two months and like a week away. In your opinion, the biggest story heading into the season?
Oh, boy. Let's think about it for a second here. Probably it's hard to get off of Ben Roethlisberger, you know, because it really is, you know, Pittsburgh ended up in third place last year. And so they've got there's only two games that really end up mattering, but they've got the third place schedule. And if I can look it up real fast, I was looking at this yesterday. But a couple of the teams that they ended up with on their schedule, I want to say it was, comparing it to the Bengals, it was Tennessee instead of Indy, and it was Oakland instead of San Diego. So basically the same schedule, except they're going to get the Raiders and the Titans instead of the Chargers and the Colts. And so you would say, okay, and now they've got Aaron Smith, and they've got Troy Polamalu, and they've got, you know, all this stuff coming back, and they're the favorite. But, you know, can they go through those first 4 weeks? And I think that's what it'll be. I think the suspension will get knocked down to four games. Atlanta at Tennessee, at Tampa Bay, and Baltimore at home, without Roethlisberger, without, you know, falling too far behind, because, you know, that's the world champion that kind of didn't make the playoffs again for the second time after winning the Super Bowl.
And then you have on top of that the whole moral part of these Steeler fans, probably, you know, maybe the worst city for that to happen to, because it's so blue-collar family and the Steelers family-owned, such a big part of everything that goes on in that city. And it seems like they're struggling a little bit for whether they still want to root for this guy.
Yeah, I was really surprised by that. Maybe I shouldn't have been, because I've been in that city enough to know, you know, that it is family to them. And Santonio Holmes was let go earlier in the year, and they were clearly trying to take a stand. But what are you talking about, a tough conflict of interest decision for the Pittsburgh Steelers? I'm sure that part of them would have liked to have said, hey, you're out of here, buddy. You know, we don't tolerate that kind of behavior, and we're cutting you or trading you or whatever the case may be. But he's such a good player, and you know how hard it is to find one of the guys. And let's face it, if you've got one of the guys playing quarterback, you have a chance to win the Super Bowl. And if you don't have one of the guys, you probably don't have much of a chance to win the Super Bowl. And so I think it's been a real tough off season for the organization and for the fans, and obviously for Ben. But I think the biggest thing that came out of it was not, you know, what happened with the two women. I think what happened was people started telling the truth about situations and how he was treating people in Pittsburgh. You know, that to me seemed to be the real backlash amongst the fans. And once somebody started telling the story, then somebody else said, well, yeah, he treated me like this here and he did this to me there. And all of a sudden that thing really started to snowball on him. And so he's, you know, he's got some ground to make up with those fans.
I thought they should have traded him, and here's why. Because they already won two Super Bowls, and you're playing with house money at that point. And I think, as you said, he is one of the guys. And, you know, once you have one of those guys, you don't want to give up one of those guys, obviously. There's only 8 to 10 of them total.
Right.
But On the other hand, if anything goes wrong now, they're just going to – I feel like he's going to be on such a short leash with the fans, with the city, with everything, that if anything goes wrong or if he's playing bad, they're not going to give him the benefit of the doubt. He almost has to throw a no-hitter this season, basically.
He's got a yellow card in the first minute, and
yes.
He's looking at red, right? I think that's kind of what we're all saying. But, the guy, I really wonder where they would be without him, And I really can't wait to watch these first 4 weeks. And I think the surprising thing to me is, okay, here's what they did on offense, and, they're not running the ball, and there's an edict now from the organization. We're getting back to our roots, and Bruce Arians stopped throwing it every down and all that kind of stuff. But what was stunning to me was watching what happened to them last year without Polamalu and without Smith and some of those guys, but especially Polamalu, and how much of the mystery of the Pittsburgh Steelers defense was built around what he does. They really, and they'll tell you this, the players will, Dick LeBeau will, that a lot of what he does, he kind of does on his own. And they have all these signals in their defensive secondary that allows Polamalu, if he smells something, to go get it. In other words, he'll just guess. He'll say by the way that it looks, or that I think they're running a slant here. And he'll leave his free safety position and go jump the slant and off and score. Well, he'll turn to his Ryan Clark, I think's the other safety, and give him a little signal, and Clark will cover for him. Well, when Polamalu was out there, Clark's not the move guy, or so the whole thing kind of collapsed. It wasn't, all the mystery was gone, and they were just having to make plays based on ability, and it just wasn't the same.
Was there a team that you felt with the draft and with free agency jumped a level?
Boy, it's hard to not say the Baltimore Ravens. That was a team with Flacco and with the ability to run the ball with Rice and the way they can play defense with Ray Lewis. That if Stallworth and Bolden can come in and make plays at receiver, they're two big tackles, two offensive linemen appear to be so solid. And that's a team that is just always dangerous to me, And to me, the question had always been, could they ever get the passing game going to the level? I understand that Flacco has been working in the offseason with a baseball pitcher trying to work on his accuracy. He's got that big 6'6" delivery, and he was so good his rookie year. And, they're just trying to hone in that accuracy a little bit. Now you add him with Heap and Mason and those guys. That appears to be the team, especially with Pittsburgh going through the thing with Roethlisberger, with Cincinnati's passing game still in question. Could that be the one team that really makes the jump?
Tomlinson, McNabb, who is going to have less of an impact next season?
Tomlinson, I think. Running backs, it's pretty tough for them to play much beyond 30 I just can't see him being much more than a role player. Whereas McNabb, I thought that was one of the great additions to a team I've ever seen. I mean, the Redskins were really in sort of disarray. No matter what anybody else says, they were just swimming out there. They really were. And then they bring in Shanahan. But then you bring in McNabb, and I know people are going to always talk about McNabb and his accuracy, and I don't disagree with that. I don't think that he's a typical West Coast kind of quarterback. And when you look at what it's going to mean for Philadelphia with Kevin Cobb, I think they'll get back to more of a classic West Coast kind of offense. But now you're going to get in Shanahan's offense a guy that big, strong, powerful guy that's going to bring a little fun, that's going to bring a little laughter back to the huddle, that is a dynamic personality, that's also going to be able to handle, so much of Shanahan's offense is always built around running the ball and then bootlegs and play action off of it. And you're going to get this big 240-pound athletic guy who clearly doesn't run the way that he once did, but you know, is a guy that is just hard to tackle. I mean, you see a lot of guys get hands and arms and they grab him by the leg. You know, they just can't get him on the ground. You know, he and Roethlisberger are probably the two toughest guys to just get on the ground. But I just think that, you know, it sounds weird to say that a quarterback's charisma can make a difference. But the Redskins have just been so beaten down for so long, and this whole thing with Haynesworth and all the junk that's going on with him, I just think that you're going to see a different personality come out of the Washington Redskins, and they've got a great coach now, and they could very easily surprise a lot of people because their defense is pretty good.
I think Tomlinson's done, and I thought he was done last year. I think McNabb is done in a different way that I think he's done as a guy who could – take you from 10-6 to winning the Super Bowl. I don't think you can win a title with him. I might be wrong. It almost is like he might be a little almost tantalizing, where he can on paper and he shows you these flashes during the games and you talk yourself into it. But I just wonder, like, he was really bad at, you know, in that playoff game, and he just has not had the postseason success. And for the Eagles to just walk away from him like that, isn't that a red flag? Like, they didn't care that he went in their division.
Yes, I agree with you. But I will say this, that a lot of opinions have been formed about McNabb based on those last two games and you know, playing the Cowboys defense twice. Remember the Cowboys, I don't think they were the number one ranked defense as far as points allowed, but I think they were second or third. They were right there among the top teams. That is a really, really high-end defense. And you can say whatever you want about Wade Phillips not being a dynamic personality and not a good, you know, banquet hall speaker or whatever the case may be. And he's not great with us either. I'll admit that too. But he's a guy that understands defense. And that defense right now is really good. They have a really good set of corners on the back end. They've got DeMarcus Ware who can get after the quarterback. Ratliff is tough inside. You know, they've got a couple of good linebackers, a couple of veterans in there now. So this is a defense that is really legitimate. And, you know, well, the Redskins are going to have to play the Cowboys again too. And he's certainly not going to have the receivers that he had in Philadelphia, all those young players up there. But I still think that Jason Campbell was such a quiet, shy kind of a kid that the stark contrast between what they're going to get from Jason and what they're going to get from Donovan is just going to be like, you know, Mardi Gras. You know, they're going to be excited to be out there. And you'd be surprised at what a personality of a quarterback in a huddle can do. I mean, it really can make a difference.
Potential to be a brutal division. Like, historically brutal. I mean, those arguably could be 4-10-win teams. I think the Giants are going to be better than people think. I might be naive, but.
You can't assume, you know, that their defense is going to be that awful again. I mean, you know, let's face it, that was pathetic what we saw out of the Giants defensively a season ago. And, you know, there's no question that losing Spagnuolo to the Rams, you know, was a big part of that. But this is a defense that, you know, just is going to have to be better, and it's going to be interesting to see if they can replace their definite leader in Antonio Pierce to try and get things going. Their safety play was just abysmal a season ago.
But that's all fixable stuff, though. We saw that with the Saints. Like, you can plug holes in defense, I think, a lot easier than you can plug other things.
You know, and I don't disagree with you. I don't expect that defense to be anywhere close to that bad again. And I tell you, Jason Pierre-Paul, do you remember the kid they drafted?
Yeah.
Out of everybody that I studied on tape, as far as just who was the most explosive, just guy that it was hard to turn the tape off, it was him.
Yeah.
I don't know that he's, you know, this well-oiled machine, this guy that understands everything about, you know, professional defenses. But I know this, if you stick him on the end of the line of scrimmage and tell him to go get that quarterback, there's a pretty good chance he's getting there. This guy is about as athletic as anybody I've seen coming out in a long, long time. Now, what that means for Umanura and you know, his struggles now, and you know, the whole debate about whether he's playing, not playing, all that kind of stuff, is going to be interesting. But I do think it creates a situation where if they can get back to that whole, you know, Tuck and Umanura now play this Pierre Paul on the outside. That's how they got. That's how they won the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, because you know, New England's offensive line just couldn't block those guys. They were too fast.
Thanks for bringing that up. I'm going to be depressed again about Super Bowl 42. I hadn't thought of it in a while. The other New York team, Michael Wilbon said this on PTI the other day, that the Jets, with the amount of trash they're talking already, and he was like, the only NFL team that talked trash from the summer all the way through the season and the playoffs and actually backed it up was the 85 Bears. Anybody else that's tried to do it, the wheels have come off at some point. Do you buy that?
Let me start by saying the Jets are nowhere close to the 85 Bears.
Well, of course.
I played against the 85 Bears. We were undefeated. Actually, we played against them in 86 the year after. We were undefeated, 3-0 at home. The Bears came to town, and they beat us 41-0. And that was a 10-win team for us, so that was a pretty good team.
Yeah.
So, you know, but this is, you know, it's a team that has a chance. I mean, especially when you consider that, you know, Chris Jenkins really wasn't a factor at all a season ago. Mark Sanchez was a rookie a season ago and you know, was kind of learning on the fly. But this is a bunch that can run the ball. And probably the number one thing that stuck out for me when I was watching them on tape and getting ready for them against the Bengals at the end of the year was I have never seen a quarterback be able to stand in the pocket longer than Sanchez could and not get touched. And every tape I put on, I go, this is unbelievable. The people aren't getting anywhere close to him.
Mm.
And when you consider the way that offensive line could block, the way that they were running the football, I like this Sean Green. I think he's a, you know, he's a professional. He's a big, powerful guy that also has some speed and agility. I think he's going to be definitely a guy worth watching. Whether or not the whole thing with Thomas Jones now not being there to share the load, that's going to be an interesting one, and how much LaDainian can pick up. And Alan Faneca now not being there. I'm afraid they may underestimate what Faneca brought intelligence-wise to that offensive line. I'm going to be – it'd be interesting to see if they can still – you know, make all the calls and all the pass-offs and all the little intricate details that they were so good at a season ago, if they're still going to be that good. But, man, they've got good players up there, Brickshaw and Mangold at center. And when they want to run the ball, they run it over that right side, you know, with Moore and Woody over there. They're tough. They are legitimately tough up front. And defensively, I think they were the number one ranked scoring defense in the league a season ago. So, yeah. They're legit. Do I think they're the 85 Bears? No, but I don't think it's outrageous that people are talking about them going to the Super Bowl either.
Well, as a Patriots fan, I am glad they're doing Hard Knocks, because I do think that is a that screws up the team. I don't know. It's just it brings you this attention that you don't really need in July, and you got cameras everywhere, and you're in a fishbowl basically from that point on through January and February potentially of the Super Bowl. And I would never do it as a coach, personally.
Yeah. Rex Ryan is the guy, though, that's going to make that thing happen. And you either love the attention or you don't.
And he loves it.
I've got to say, he loves it, but not in a way like I've seen some guys love it. You know, like some guys, you know, they crave it, and it's about their ego, and it's about their... You know, Rex is one of those guys that I almost look at him, and he's kind of my age, and I don't really know how old he is, but, you know, and I grew up kind of watching his dad and played against his dad's teams and all that kind of stuff. And Rex just has a smile on his face and a laugh in his heart, and it's like somebody turned over the keys to the Lamborghini to him, and he knows he's not going to get to keep it forever, but yeah. He's going to have a heck of a time while he's driving it. And the players today, you know, it's a little bit more. These guys are making so much money, and you know, it used to be we were all scared to death of getting cut because we would have to go get a job. You know, we would have to do something legitimate with our lives at some point. And where these guys have enough money, you've got to motivate them in another way. And he motivates them by letting them go try and kill the quarterback, you know, and blitz and get after people and really have a great time out there on the football field. And he brought in the right guy and Bart Scott and a guy that I, you know, is just a nasty, nasty guy and a dynamic leader on the team. And I think one of the problems the Jets got into in the playoffs last year is Bart was, he was hurting. I don't know exactly what was hurt on him, but he was not moving and running and hitting the way that he was earlier in the year. And, you know, David Harris, and they got one of the great corners in the game, and Revis, and it's a pretty good-looking team, pretty tough.
And, you know, they were right there in that Colts game. And then there was a point where Manning just everything clicked, and he's like, all right, I figured these guys out. I'm going to win the game now. And yeah, that was it.
It is interesting. One of the articles that I just got finished writing on that Football Pros Live was about Manning. And you go back, and, you know, this is the time, like you, I'm starting to do all the research and going back over all the statistics and all the different things. And the article was basically, you can't argue with Peyton Manning winning the MVP. I mean, you know, they're just, you can't argue with it. But by the numbers, you know, he had the sixth best quarterback rating. He didn't win the Super Bowl. I know the voting takes place before the Super Bowl and such.
Yep.
But you've got Chris Johnson out there who, for over 2,000, he had 2,500 combined yards from scrimmage, an NFL record. He had Brett Favre, who had 107 quarterback rating to Peyton Manning's 99 quarterback rating. How could he not have won it if you didn't want to give it to Drew Brees for whatever reason, who also had a 13-game undefeated stretch of the thing going? And I guess my conclusion ended up being, I think that people just said, which player, if you took him off of that team, would the team lose the most? Would they have almost no chance whatsoever? And when you put it in those terms, the answer always comes out to be Peyton Manning because of all the intangibles that he brings.
You think that him versus Brady, that argument's over? Or do you expect Brady to maybe flip it a little bit this year?
I think the argument has been expanded. I think what Drew Brees has done the last 3 years in this league has put him at the forefront. I mean, this point, how do you not say that Drew Brees, with the top quarterback rating, with a team that is certainly not a defensive powerhouse by any stretch of the imagination, although they had a great Super Bowl. I thought they really played well in the Super Bowl. And you know, a running game that's okay, you know, but for the most part, that team is built around Drew Brees. But I don't think he was ever going to get that recognition until he won a Super Bowl. But now, with those numbers, if you had known at the end, if you take the vote for the MVP at the end of the season, who do you vote for? To me, it's a no-brainer. Drew Brees, the MVP.
I think he has the QB championship belt right now. I would agree.
I you know, that's where I am right now. And I don't mean to be insulting to Brady or Manning because, you know, they're great players and they'll probably be right back on top. But if you had to say coming into this season, who has the belt, I'm giving it to Brees.
The only thing I'd say in Brady's defense and also in Roethlisberger's defense is I think when you're playing in for a cold weather team, we never factor that part in enough. Like, of course Drew Brees' stats are going to be better. He's in a dome for 8 games. Like, of course Manning's going to be better in his 8 home games because he's weather controlled for the most part. And I don't think we, you know, when you look at the games that Brady played last year and some of the elements and some of the different cities, like, yeah, I think he might have had a better season than maybe we realized. I obviously don't think was better than Manning or Brees, but shouldn't that factor in, though?
Absolutely, and it's a great point. Same thing with kickers. Just look at what Brett Favre did once he got to leave Green Bay in New York and go inside the dome. I mean, he had 33 touchdown passes and 7 interceptions. Peyton Manning last year won the MVP with 33 touchdown passes and 16 interceptions.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it's there's clearly a difference in what goes on when you're playing inside. There's no question.
If I was a QB in my mid-30s, I would be looking at the domes like, oh, the Rams, they need a quarterback. Like, it just seems like that would extend your career by a couple of years. So you're not, it doesn't sound like you're buying the Patriots at all.
No, the funny thing is, and again, I'm in my statistical mode right now, so bear with me because I've been doing a lot of work with that. But I want to say they're one of the rare teams that they were one of the top scoring offenses in the league. And defensively, they were one of the top statistical teams in the league in that category, too. I'll have to come back and look it up as we go here. But I think really what happened to that football team was that they got Wes Welkert. When they lost Wes for the playoffs, it was just a different-looking team. Baltimore hit them on some big plays. But New England as a team last year, they were second in the AFC, only behind the San Diego Chargers with 427 points. Yeah. So, everybody, and it was like it was a train wreck or something because, you know, they were this and that and they couldn't do this and that. But then you look back at the statistics and you go, they had a hell of a year. You know, I mean, I don't know that I just think they had a bad playoff game. They had one bad playoff game and you know, they didn't rush the passer anymore. I thought losing Seymour was, you know, probably good long term, bad short term, because when I study the Patriots, I've always kind of looked at them as a team that, you know, on that defensive line, they could dominate. You know, they set those ends outside edge of the tackles, and they squeeze down. So you can't run outside because they're playing outside edge. But, you know, Ty Warren and Vince Wilfork and Richard Seymour when he was there, they just controlled those five guys up front. You know, they, and then everybody else was able to run around and make plays. But now, you know, without that sort of dominance among those, that front three that they had, I thought they really took a step backwards defensively.
Yeah, I'll always wonder if Belichick kind of saw that season coming, and that's why the Seymour trade happened and some other stuff, because he knew that was going to be a transition year for them. And, you know, you have a chance to stock up with that Raiders pick, and now that, who knows, that could be a top five pick in this draft. But the chemistry was off with that team. And I never trust these teams that just roll over in the biggest game of the season. And they did it, and the Eagles did it. And the Eagles, you know, they played the McNabb card, and they were like, all right, we got to officially change this.
This goes back to one of our pro football or footballproslive.com deals. This is one of my next ones. How much do the Patriots miss Asante Samuel? You're a fan of the team, right?
Yeah.
You watch them all the time. Asante Samuel was one of those X-factor guys.
Yeah.
Okay? He was Troy Polamalu to me. No matter how much Bill Belichick may have coached that guy, nobody really knew what he was going to do on a play. You know, he might take a chance and give up a big touchdown and, you know, who knows. And maybe he's not the greatest tackler in the world. But I'm telling you, nobody knew what he was going to do on a play, and that included Peyton Manning a lot. You know, he made a lot of mistakes to Asante Samuel over the years because he was just a little, you know, I'm going to call him creative. I'm going to give him a euphemism. He was creative back there in the back end, and he creates problems. And there just hasn't been quite the same mystery to the Patriots defense since he left either.
Yeah, they've made a couple calls over the years, and it worked in the first part of the decade, and then it didn't work as well, where they just were like, look, we're only paying a certain price for you. We're not going over our price. And I still will always think that not signing Deion Branch that year, even though he would have been overpaid, I think they win the Super Bowl that year. And you could maybe make the case, had they kept Samuel and paid for him, same thing. I don't know. Part of me does wonder, though, if they just used up all of their breaks and all the good karma, all that stuff, the first part of the decade. Because, man, you look back at the last 6 years and some of the stuff that just went against them, and it's like it just seems like everything kind of swung around. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I you know, that would be it's really frightening to think about that people are essentially dismissing the New England Patriots this year. You know, and everybody's going, okay, it's the Jets division, and who's going to come in second between the Patriots and Dolphins? And, you know, you got this whole thing going on. And then the more you keep looking at the statistics of last season, you're going, wait a minute now. Assuming Welker is going to be back at some point, they're going to end up healthier at their linebacker position than what they were.
Well, and don't forget, and Brady, that was a 2-year injury.
Thank you very much. That was the final point. You got him coming back from what was an injury that we've seen 100% of the time. The second year back is always better than the first. And if you remember, Tom, in the beginning of the season, struggled. I mean, he really was not himself. I thought he came on at the end of the year, but you could clearly see a little bit of hesitation as he was standing in the pocket. And
no question.
We never saw that out of him in the past.
You saw that, and you also saw, it wasn't like he was Dante Culpepper circa 2000 running around back there. But he was very good at kind of moving a couple feet to the left or the right, maybe tucking in a couple times. And he wanted no part of that last season. And I do feel like that was a competitive disadvantage as the year went along and teams realized, like, this guy will never, ever tuck it and run with the ball. Yeah, and well, they just left the middle of the field wide open. They knew he wasn't going to run.
We've definitely seen that one on more than one occasion. And certainly Carson Palmer in Cincinnati, I thought the first year after his knee injury, anytime, if I were coaching the defensive line, I would have had somebody falling at his feet on every throw. Because you could see him flinch. And, yeah. I thought there was a little bit of that with Tom Brady in the first few games back as well, that it just was one of those. And, you know, I'm not, you know, blaming him or anything. It's just human nature. It is just, you know, you've had knee surgery. You've been through 9 months of rehab. He's been through clean-out surgeries. They've treated him so delicately. And now there's 300-pounders falling at your knee.
Yeah.
You're not human if you're not, you know, flinching a little bit. And that's, you know, quarterbacks aren't, you know, in live action during the practice sessions or anything else. So there's no way to rehearse that moment. So but I agree with you. I think Brady back in the second year in a team that people are just totally dismissing as a dangerous situation.
And they also may have finally had a good draft, which they hadn't really had for 5 years. And it seems like, I really like the draft they had, and I like they brought in some character guys. I like the Florida linebackers, stuff like that, so that'd be interesting. Last question. Every year, there's one team that sucked the year before. We don't expect them to be good. Look at the Saints, team like that. Wait, where'd they come from? Oh, my. If you told me before the year, we do that whole routine. It happens every year. So, obviously, it has to happen this year. Who's that team?
There's a lot of them that come to my mind, and I'm trying to think of one that's...
No, you have to pick one. You have to bet on one.
And how bad do they have to have been the year before?
They have to have been that I can't expect it. It can't be like one of those things where, who was the team last year? Oh, the Bengals. People are like, oh, the Bengals. Look at the bet. They're going to, you know, it was like we kind of saw them coming a little bit, and they made the playoffs. They lost, obviously. But a team like the Saints, nobody saw coming. Nobody was talking about them. So yeah. It would have to be of that kind of category. The sleeper. The legitimate sleeper, not the fake sleeper.
All right. Well, the one team that I've got a little bit in the back of my brain, and they're not like they were terrible last year, but the Bears. Because nobody's talking about them in that division. You know, you've got the Vikings, and Brett's going to be back. I don't think there's any question. Aaron Rodgers and the Packers are tremendous. I mean, God almighty, I love watching that offense. I think they're going to be so much fun. But you throw Mike Martz into the mix with Jay Cutler, and Jay Cutler was under unbelievable amount of pressure last year. And this year, that doesn't exist. Plus, I think Cutler has a little chip on his shoulder now, has something to prove. You know, has Mike Martz there that is going to be able to, you know, help him along a little bit more. I thought their offensive line was not good at all last season, and they've made some changes up front there. And, you know, Matt Forte, I think, averaged about 3.5 yards per carry. So I think Cutler threw the ball more than any quarterback in the league in Chicago. That makes no sense. Urlacher was the brains of the operation on that defense. He was, you can ask anybody. He runs practice. He's sort of like Peyton Manning. You know, he makes all the calls, and he's knocked out in the first or second week, whatever that was, for the season. So there's enough there, you know, that if a Tommy Harris is healthy and there's some different things that happen with that team, that, you know, I think they have a chance.
That's a good one. I like that one. Yeah, I mean, I got to look at it. This is my favorite thing to try to figure out every year. Who's going to be that team, the team that we never expected?
Yeah, you know, I mean, some of the easy ones, I think the 49ers are a legitimate one. I think the Atlanta Falcons, who didn't make the playoffs last year, are a team that could be really dangerous in this coming season. So, yeah, those are a few of mine there. So
maybe the Raiders.
No.
Maybe the Raiders. Who knows?
You never know. You know, I mean, it's the NFL.
Never know.
It's the NFL. We got a lot to talk about. So,
Chris Collinsworth, footballproslive.com.
The
Go there and read your wisdom, and we'll get you on Inside the NFL, and we'll get you on Sunday Night Football. As always, a pleasure. Enjoy the last few weeks before the first game.
All right, Bill. I enjoyed it, buddy. Have a great fourth.
You too. And now, our old friend Jacko turns 40 today. We're going to give him a call at work to say happy birthday. Here it goes.
Bill, Jacko, partners in crime.
Complex Litigation, this is John.
Johnny.
What's up, buddy?
Happy birthday, buddy.
Thank you very much, my friend.
The big 4-0.
The big 4-0.
I don't think you're going to play in the major leagues. I think it's over. The dream is dead.
I can stop waiting by the phone for NBA GMs to call me now that free agency started.
Now, you might, with some of the contracts that have been handed out, you might actually get one. I'd be prepared.
I can probably put up similar numbers to Joe Johnson for far less than $119
million. If Darko can get $20 million, I think you're worth at least five as a 12th man, locker room presence.
I would be good in the locker room. I'd make a lot of jokes, make everybody feel good, you know?
That would be so awesome if a team did that. They just signed somebody strictly for just to hang out with the other players.
Just to be the opposite of a clubhouse cancer.
Yeah. We have no illusions. He'll never play. He'll never play 1 minute for us. We just think he'll be funny in the plates.
I can rebound in the layup line, you know, and just throw him back to the guys. So
he's an excellent card player.
You know what I keep thinking of today that I turned 40? I keep thinking about that. I think it was the Oklahoma State coach a couple of years ago.
Oh, Mike Gundy.
Yeah, he did the rant about, like, don't go after the quarterback. He goes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
Yeah.
That's what I kept screaming today in my head. I'm a man. I'm 40.
That's what some people call the 40th birthday, Mike Gundy Day.
It's my Mike Gundy Day today.
Happy Mike Gundy. What's the plan? What's on the agenda? Just drunkenness?
I can't anymore. I'm 40 now, so anything I do, it can't be chalked up to youthful hijinks anymore.
Oh, how Ted Kennedy is frowning at you at his grave right now.
Good point. I think it's going to be pretty low-key today because it's the July 4th weekend. So many people are going away for the weekend and such, you know, type things. But my wife is having a party for me on July 10th, I believe, next Saturday. So that may hopefully be a rager.
A week after the birthday party.
A week after the birthday party, mm-hmm. Because it's awkward when your birthday's around the holiday because, you know, it's a big travel weekend. People are going to the beach and going to lake houses and going different places, so people are out of town. So,
Johnny, have you been watching the World Cup?
I have been watching some of the World Cup, yes.
What's your take? America needs it.
Well, I don't know. I read your column yesterday, and it received effusive praise from a couple guys that I work with that are soccer fanatics.
Oh, that's nice of them.
They liked your thoughts on soccer, thought it hit the nail on the head, and were impressed with your soccer knowledge. I tend to fall into the Klosterman camp that believes that you've been brainwashed like the Manchurian Candidate by.
There's a chip in my neck.
There's a chip in your neck, and you were brainwashed. That movie, I forgot the character's name. It was Raymond something, but all the guys were like, he's the finest, most wonderful person I ever met. That's what they were brainwashed to say, even though they all hated him.
Yeah.
So I wanna like soccer. My wife likes soccer. She's dragged me. I've gone with her to several games in the past couple of years. We saw Beckham's first game against the Red Bulls in New York, and I saw a U.S. Argentina game at the Meadowlands a couple of years ago, and I just recently went for her birthday to the U.S. against the Czech Republic right here in East Hartford, Connecticut, at our own Rentschler Field. And I like the chanting and the singing and the passion and all that. It's good that you can lock in for like 45 minutes, a half, and, you know, it's not like baseball where you could be there for 5 hours.
Yeah.
But I find, like, large elements of it just painfully boring. I mean, I try to give it a chance, but it's just, God, it's painful.
So your problem with soccer is you like everything about it, but just there's a little too much soccer.
I hate the diving. The diving is just, I mean, a guy, gets tapped and grabs his leg like he's never going to walk again. And then when the other guy doesn't get a yellow card, he hops back up. I mean,
you know what's
terrible.
Funny, though? Because I used to hate it more than I do now, and I think the reason is because we've seen it so much in the NBA, I'm more conditioned to it now. I'm used to people lying about whether they've been fouled or hurt or whatever.
Yeah, it's bled into the NBA. Yeah, which is terrible. I mean, it's awful. I understand gamesmanship and all that and trying to get a call, but I mean, it's really, you need like an acting class. I think they take acting classes more than practice.
Right.
And the thing I'll never understand, and everybody that I've talked to about it agrees, why don't they have a clock that's the real time? Like, why is the time kept on a watch on the referee's wrist? Wouldn't it be so much more exciting, like that Donovan goal, if you knew, like, oh, there's only 45 seconds left or a minute left or whatever, you count down? Isn't that one of the exciting things in sports, like the last second shot?
Isn't that part of the charm of it, though, is that there's a mystery if you don't really know how much time's left?
I
think there are 3 minutes left. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. Well, maybe it was scored with a minute left. Maybe there was 2 minutes left. Maybe it's up to the referee's whim. I just don't get that. And everybody that's into it, I mean, I'm not one of these guys that, like, just bashes it and hates it. I'm willing to give it a chance, but I don't know that it's ever going to catch on in America because I just don't think there's enough scoring.
Yeah.
Now, people out there are saying, well, there's not a lot of scoring in baseball either, and people like that. But the difference in baseball is something could happen on every single pitch. Every time a guy throws it, somebody could hit it out. They could hit a 500-foot home run. In soccer, large portions of the game, there's just nothing going on. They're exchanging the ball at midfield. There's no scoring chance.
Right.
I think the field is too big.
you want bigger goals, too?
No, I don't want bigger goals. I want a smaller field. I think the field's too big. I think it would make it more exciting if you had a smaller field. I realize this is like the old Saturday Night Live skit when Wayne Gretzky was on and he was playing for the LA Kings, and they had all these idiot celebrities come in and give their opinions on hockey, like Dana Carvey was John Travolta.
Yeah.
And he's like, why don't they put a piece of wood with a midget in front of the goal or whatever? I realize that's what I sound like. I fully understand that. But
yeah.
I think the field is too big. If you made the field a little smaller, you know, compacted things and there was more scoring, I think it would be a more exciting game.
I'm down with it. It's going to be interesting. These next 2 years will be interesting to see what kind of momentum they get, because really – there's not a lot going on unless you start following the guys overseas.
Yeah.
There's not, like, big tournaments coming up or anything, and the qualifiers don't start until 2013, so.
I mean, and maybe it was you that made this point, but, I mean, America is at a little bit of a disadvantage because our best athletes don't play soccer.
Yeah.
The best athletes in America, they play basketball and football, largely.
Well, someone made an interesting point in an email to me, one of the readers, about with all the concussion studies that everybody's doing now, and it really does seem like football, American football,
mm-hmm.
It does seem like if you're a parent and you read some of this concussion stuff, and I'm thinking about it with my son, because my son's like totally built to play football and any physical sport. He's a tank.
Without a helmet. Yeah.
Without a helmet. but it's like you read these concussion things and you read like the Chris Henry story about what happened to him.
Yeah.
And you're just like, wow, do I want my son to play football? I don't know.
Right, but it's so ingrained in the American culture, and you know, we like violence and scoring.
Yeah, but so is boxing, and now barely anybody boxes, you know?
True.
And I do wonder if there's going to be more of those athletes pushed toward soccer by overprotective parents, because God, Lord knows we have enough overprotective parents.
Right. Now. There's not really much violence in soccer. And when there is, when you get bumped, then you fall on the ground and hold your leg for 20 minutes.
Right. I do think, though, the goalies don't get enough credit for their position and how you can really just get clocked at any point if you're a soccer goalie. You get kicked in the head. You can get nailed on a header. There's a lot of bad things that can happen to soccer goalies.
And, I mean, when the ball's in the air and you have, like, three or four guys all going for it, leading with their head, it's a possibility that's not going to end well.
At the same time, though, like, imagine we're in college and we're all watching that Algeria game together in some bar.
Oh, sure.
And we score. Like, you might have been hooked 20 years ago more than maybe you would be at age 40.
I mean, I like the passion of it. I like, you know, going to games when everybody has, like, these singing and they have, like, these, you know, organized chants and everybody's into it.
Tailgating.
There's going to be, like, a lot of drinking around the sport. I obviously encourage that. I'm a fan of that, obviously. The excuse to go to a bar at 9:30 in the morning and watch some big match. I'm down with all that.
You know what's sad, though? If Ireland was better and Ireland was more involved, I think you'd be more excited.
I would be into it, yeah. And, I mean, I'm a loyal American. I was rooting for America. And
but you'd root for Ireland harder.
I would be into the Irish thing, yes. I would have a green soccer jersey, there's no question.
Well, plus it would mean
they got
more.
Screwed by France, though, who cheated with their handball, and the gods decided on that one, as we would say in college. That came back to haunt them.
Well, I could say this being 25% Irish, and you're 75%, I think.
Yeah.
75%?
50, but yes.
50, yeah. But it really worked out the way you would have thought it would have worked out for Ireland. Like, they get totally screwed, and then the team that screws them over proceeds to go to the World Cup and disgraces themselves and quits to make it, like, three times worse. Like,
right.
They already felt bad. You're already, like, fatalistic and self-loathing if you're Ireland,
right.
Rooting for any sports team.
As an Irish person, then all I had left in the World Cup was to root for, as an Irish American, was to root for America and root against England.
Yeah, and root against France, who then and both of those teams are out. All of them are gone. It is kind of funny though when like you know, the Netherlands plays Brazil. Two countries that have never really what would they have in common?
Well, the one that fascinates me is like Uruguay, Ghana. Like, do they even have embassies in each other's countries? Like Uruguay and Ghana. Like, is there any connection whatsoever there? It's just, it strikes me as so odd. One country in Africa, one country in South America, sort of small, obscure countries. No offense to any Ghanaians or Uruguayans that are listening, but true. On the world stage, you're not really going to, like, if you were to say to somebody, write down the names of 100 countries, I'm not sure Ghana or Uruguay would be included in anybody's top 100, and that they're, like, in a big crucial final eight match in the World Cup. One of them's going to be in the final four.
Kimmel said on his show, he was saying if it's Paraguay, Uruguay, if they end up playing in the finals, it would be his dream because it would be an Uruguay finals. I thought that was pretty good. All right, quickly, the Yanks. How are you feeling?
I feel good. I think they need another bat, though. I want more offense. Javi Vasquez is Javi Vasquez, and hopefully A.J. Burnett will get turned around now that the pitching coach is back, Dave Strong Island. But I think they need another bat. I don't think they have enough offense. I was looking at trade possibilities yesterday with some guys at work, and I want Prince Fielder.
Wow, you're going heavy.
I want Prince Fielder.
Going after the big boys.
We had his father, and Milwaukee's not going anywhere. He's going to be a free agent, I think, so he wouldn't be that expensive. You wouldn't have to give up a lot of prospects because he's not going to be there long term.
Would he be a free agent this winter?
I'm not sure. I thought he was. I think so, isn't he? Or does he have one more year left? I think this is his final year.
I think you might be right. I can't remember for sure because if he's a free agent a year from now, you'd have to give up Montero, the catcher.
Yeah, but if he's a free agent after this year, I mean, you know.
Yeah, but if I never understand why baseball teams do this because wouldn't you just rather keep him and then get the draft picks when he leaves other than giving him away and you're just like basically crushing your fans?
Yeah, but you're not going anywhere anyway. So you get some prospects now. Maybe there's a little bit of hope.
But at least
what you have to determine is if he goes and signs with some big team, the Yankees or the Red Sox or somebody, the draft pick's going to be pretty low.
Where would you? So he would just be your DH. Your thing.
Oh God, yeah.
Don't you already have enough DHs, or am I?
Well, no. I mean, they've been using Jorge as the DH because on days that he doesn't catch. But, you know, Francisco Cervelli is not an everyday catcher, and
I don't want you guys to get Crawford. That would be the guy that worries me, because now the Rays have fallen out of it a little bit after everybody thought they're going to win 120 games. But
they're only like two and a half games out.
Well, I'm talking about next year.
Oh, they're going to get Crawford next year. Don't worry.
Oh, you've locked that in anyway.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they're going to go get him as a free agent. There's no question.
All right, damn it.
And I don't want Prince. I don't think they need to clog up the DH thing full time because, you know, Posada is going to be the DH pretty much. And, you know, I understand. I've endorsed their philosophy of wanting to use it as a way to give, like, A-Rod a day off from third as a DH and et cetera. But I think they need another bat now this year. And crunch time, I want Posada catching all the time, even though he had a pass ball yesterday that led in two runs. But he should be the catcher, and we need a big-time DH.
So it sounds like you're cautiously optimistic. I mean, the Red Sox have just been destroyed by injuries. And
I know, but
it's getting comical.
It's
pretty sad when Jason Veritek gets hurt, and you're like, oh, my God, we've lost Jason Veritek, the guy who hit 120 last year.
I thought it was like a April Fool's joke when I saw the crawl on ESPN this morning on SportsCenter when it said he's out 4 to 6 weeks. I was like, I didn't even hear about him getting injured in any of the game reports from recent games. I must have missed that. And it's like, God, one more injury for them. But, you know, somehow they're doing it with smoke and mirrors. They're still there.
Well, you can kind of hang around in either league as long as you don't lose like your closer and your setup guy, and as long as you have like three starters who are competent.
Yeah, and they have
they
have a great starting staff, and
all they have to do is
hang around, and then in a couple of weeks they're going to get back PED Roya, and they're going to get back.
Oh, it's Johnny. I didn't like that at all.
And then they're going to get back Beckett. And they're going to get back Victor Martinez. I mean, it's like making all these trades when you get all these guys back. And if they're like within, you know, four or five games of the Yanks, then it's going to, I'm going to be concerned about that.
Well, we're going to call you next week.
All right.
Because I want to delve into this a little further. And I also haven't done enough baseball research yet. I've fallen. The World Cup has kind of knocked me out of the baseball loop for a
The chip in
weeks.
Your head has prevented you from watching anything but soccer. I understand.
It's weird. Every time I turn the Red Sox on, I get a headache. And then when I turn them off, it's fine. And then when I turn the World Cup on, I get this weird orgasmic feeling. It's not like having an orgasm, but it's happy. I just see clouds and I smell flowers.
Luckily, at July 11th, it's all over. They'll turn the chip off for 4 years, so that'll be good.
I'm going to miss the chip.
Tough one for Brazil today.
I know. I tweeted, I thought, like, what would Jim Nance's call have been at the end of that game? And I think it would have been, Brazil has been waxed!
Can you say they played like Kaká? That's too easy.
I guess I don't know what he would have done for the Netherlands-Dutch angle for the call, but
I saw online there was an own goal where it's not going to be a 40 for 40 in 10 years, so hopefully is it?
I was thinking, I think anybody who saw the two Escobars kind of had that feeling like, uh-oh, the two Mellos in 2018.
The two Escobars was so good, by the way. Kudos on that one. That was fascinating.
Thanks, Johnny.
Fascinating.
All right, Johnny.
I don't care about soccer. It was fascinating regardless.
We're going to call you next week. And by the way, I want you to be prepared to talk Real World New Orleans when we talk next week.
All right. I'll watch. I'll tune in.
Johnny, happy birthday.
Thanks,
buddy. It's been a pleasure knowing you for the last 22 years. I'm glad we get to share our 40s together.
Fantastic. I look forward to it.
Talk to you soon.
See ya.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
So I get to sign off.
Whoa. Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.